Hey guys, I'm Valerie.
And I'm Jasmine, and this is Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
We are officially in the second half of our seventh season, and today we are going to be talking about a case that I actually watched a documentary for. As everybody knows, I'm not big into the watching films and stuff like that, because Jasmine asks me all the time if I've seen something, and I never have. But I did do that for this. So we're going to be talking about Gloria Vale. And the sources for today is going to start out with that documentary. It's three episodes. It's on Amazon Prime. It's called Gloria Vale. They're probably about an hour long each, maybe a little bit shorter. And then there's News Hub, The Guardian, Stuff.co.New Zealand, Yahoo News, New Zealand Herald, TV New Zealand, Apologetics Index, and Greymouth Star. So in case that wasn't obvious, we're going to be going to New Zealand today. Woohoo!
Woo woo! New Zealand! What's up?
Yeah, we were actually there not that long ago, because we went there last season too. So, I don't know, just got a thing for New Zealand right now. First we talked about a mass murder, now we're going to talk about a cult. So, not great things, but New Zealand's supposed to be amazing. It's very top of my list. And we are going to go to the South Island.
Yeah, man, I would love to go.
Yeah, right? It's supposed to be so beautiful. So, people from New Zealand, if you're listening, we want to come. Just so you know. So
invite us, please.
We are going to be going to the South Island next to Lake Haupiri. Sitting there lies Gloria Vale Christian Community. It started as the Springbank Christian Community near Christchurch with Neville Cooper as a preacher, and when it got too big in 1991, it moved to its current location and was named Gloria Vale. So there's your spoiler, this is still in existence. In 2018, its census listed 609 people, but several are said to have left in 2019. That being said, I'm sure that they've had just as many babies since then as the number of people who have left, but that'll all make sense in a little bit here. So the total commune covers about 8 square miles, which is 21 square kilometers. So Gloria Vale's like very different from the other cults that we've talked about. And I should mention that they do not consider themselves to be a cult. But it is a very, very religious cult. And I know we have, we've discussed religious cults, but not like this. At Gloria Vale, people have an incredibly close relationship with God. So to the members, their priorities are to be as godly as possible. Community comes before their own wants and needs, and the leaders make every single decision for the community through discussion and prayer. They have Sunday meetings as a group instead of as a formal church service, and at those meetings they profess their faith. So there's only two ways you can really get into the community. The first is to be born into it, which is what the majority of people there are. And you could also be personally invited to the cult. But most people spend their entire lives at Gloria Vale. And it's not a hard life, it's a super simple life. Everyone at Gloria Vale is well-fed, they're employed, they have no debt, and they don't have any use for money. People don't spend time on technology, whether it be gaming or texting or what have you. They have computers and they have the internet, but access is actually limited to people who need it for work. And their internet use is restricted. So obviously they're not on like social media and things like that. Members are also restricted to which books, newspapers, films, and music that they have access to. And I know initially this probably sounds pretty restrictive and obstructive, but I want to remind you that the people were born here. So that is all that they know. So they actually prefer having restrictions to the type of media that they can access, according to the documentary. And that's because they think it makes them more like Christ. Because if Christ wouldn't want them to have access to, you know, Facebook, then they shouldn't have access to it. It makes them more godly. Instead, everybody works or has chores, and everyone spends a lot of time with their families. And though they have pretty much unlimited time with their families, they also do have some time with the other people in the commune. They know, like, literally everybody. But even that has some restrictions. So the man is considered the head of the household, and his children and wife are considered his subordinate, essentially. And because of this, the younger kids and teens do not intermingle with those of the opposite sex. They know who they are, but they don't really get to talk. And most of their friends are from having grown up around them, and they work these jobs together. So that being said, they all eat together, like, for every single meal in a communal dining hall at, like, very long tables. And keep in mind, there's 600 people there. So people typically work 60-hour weeks, and children complete chores before going to school. And as they get older, they're given more chores and told to wake up a little bit earlier. You don't pay for anything, but you also aren't being paid, which is a perfect setup to be trapped there. But these jobs aren't, like, made-up jobs or anything. Like, it's very much a farming community, and nobody gets paid individually, but the businesses do get paid, and the money then goes back into the community. So, jobs here have a very stereotypical gender role. Like, women do the laundry, the cleaning, the cooking, they're school teachers. And those who do laundry, for example, do laundry every single day for the entire commune. And it all gets organized into bins to be brought back to the families. Every single day.
Holy shit.
Yes. I hate doing laundry. I cannot even imagine having to do that day in and out.
I hate folding the laundry. I just, something about it aggravates the living crap out of me. And I don't know if anybody else has had to do laundry for a tiny person, like a child. Their little socks and their little pants and shorts and everything else that's really, really small is really annoying to have to sit there and try to fold.
Just throw it in a drawer.
And even like Antoine's shirts, like he likes them hung up, and I'm like, oh, I fucking hate having to hang up your shirts. Why do I have to do this? But he's really good because he actually washes the clothes, so whatever.
Well, so they're doing this times the entire facility, right? And there's people who are doing this, and they also have to iron things. So, like, and they have, like, these I know. And they show in the documentary, like, the giant, like, heat press looking irons that they have that are, like, the size of a desk that they can put, like, the, you know, the dresses in and whatever. But I was watching that, and, that's where I lost it. I'm like, okay, cooking every day, I'm sure I'd get very sick of it. You know, there's people who, you know, they're doing other things, whatever. They're seamstresses. But, like, having to do laundry every single day and having to iron and fold clothes makes me want to gouge my eyes out. Like, I cannot imagine it. And this is just all that they know. I mean, it's no different to them. Like, this is just what their job is. You know what I mean? But for me personally, that's, like, that's where he lost me, was the potential to have to do laundry forever. So those people who work in the kitchen and do all the cooking accommodate allergies like dairy or nut or gluten, anything like that. But they actually don't believe in being vegetarian because being vegetarian is a choice, whereas an allergy is something you can't help. And they think that if God didn't want them to have meat, they wouldn't be able to eat it. So
yeah, it's kind of shitty, but I mean, whatever. Yeah.
I mean, again, all they know. So men do the jobs that are like different trades, like construction or require any kind of lifting or getting dirty. And children start out in the same classes when they're small, but eventually the school is actually also divided by gender. And they comply with the standards for teaching in New Zealand. And so, you know, they're learning what they would learn if they were in a public school, although they're in a school in the commune. And then they also learn, like, a lot of, like, arts and, like, music, things like this. So they all live together to be secluded with each other. So again, they have a very limited exposure to the outside, which I will touch on in a little bit. There are four major buildings in which everybody lives, which they call hostels. So each family gets one or two rooms, depending on the size of the family. And in the rooms, there are bunk beds and drawers for their clothes. Like, that's it. It's a very, very simple life, and they have hardly any possessions. And their clothes are identical.
Ooh. Can I tell a quick story about what I seen on Facebook the other day?
Okay.
So basically, it's about a town in Alaska. And they live, like, everybody in this town lives in one, like, apartment building.
Oh, okay.
Like they just all live in this one building. Like, it's got, like, all these floors and stuff. But it's kind of, I guess, it's not like a port city, but it's definitely, you know, all, like, it has water surrounding it and stuff like that. But, like, they said, like, the cruise ships, like, sometimes stop there. So, mm-hmm. like, during, like, cruise ship seasons and stuff like that, they can get, like, two cruise ships, like, a week or something. But, yeah, like, every single person in that town was in that one building. And I thought that was so, like, interesting. And then you're saying this, where they all live in this one, like, community. And it's funny because, like, I never thought, like, I would, like, something like that would be here in the United States, or, like, you know, North America, I guess, if that doesn't sound too weird. But yeah.
Yeah. And this, I mean, this type of stuff definitely exists all over the place here. This is just, you know, this specific cult there and, like, what they're doing. I'm not calling the place in Alaska a cult, but, you know, that's very interesting that they do that. And, you know, I wonder, because is it in a part of Alaska that, like, gets really, really bad snowstorms? Like, is it just one of those things where it makes more sense for them to have everything all in one area so they always have access to everything?
I honestly don't remember, like the reason. It actually was on TikTok. I lied. It wasn't on Facebook. It was on TikTok. And it was this young girl. She was actually she was the one showing, like, their town and stuff. I don't really remember what the reasoning was, like, why they started all living there. But so there was, like, an old apartment building, but I think she said that they had, like, maybe it was I don't think it was a hurricane. I think it was, like, a bad storm. It's some kind of, basically something happened, some kind of weather thing happened. It damaged the building. And it got, like, basically nobody fixed it, so it grew, like, asbestos, so everybody had to move out of it, and then they made this new building, and literally everybody lives there. They have, like, a clinic inside, they have, grocery store inside, like, on the, like, the basement level. They have, like, literally, like, a hair, like, a salon and everything in that one building, so they don't have to really go out. I mean, they do have a few restaurants in the town, and they do actually get some visitors, like, during a tourist season. They do, like, that's how they generate their money for their town. But yeah, I don't really remember the rest of the deets.
That's pretty interesting. And you know what, we've actually talked about, we did a case early on Rodney Marks in our Mysterious Death season, and he was in Antarctica. And so they had kind of a similar, if anybody remembers that, you know, where, I mean, it wasn't all in one building, but they were just all, you know, there's just several buildings that it was a community. And obviously theirs was restricted, you know, because of travel purposes. Like, you can't go but so far. And so, you know, that's why I wonder that about Alaska. But, you know, it's very interesting how things like this aren't really that uncommon. I mean, it's not everywhere, of course, but it's not unheard of. So it's very interesting overall. And I can see how people can find the benefit in that. For me personally, it's not something I would be interested in. But I can understand, I mean, except for if I was trying it out for a couple months, like if I went to Antarctica, for example. But, like, long term, like, people in Gloryvale doing it for their entire lives. For me personally, I don't think I could do that, but I can understand the appeal to people. Everything you know and everybody you know,
yeah,
is right there.
Yeah, definitely. And she actually did describe, like, how they, like, everybody grew up in the town, like, all the kids, like, they're all, she said, she described it as, like, everybody basically being, like, family. You think of everybody as, like, your cousins or just, like, your brothers or your sisters. You get really close to them. And it's just really, because somebody asked her, like, how was dating or something like that, mm-hmm. where they lived at. She was like, we really don't date anybody who lives here in town. We go to other towns.
They actually talk about their method of dating in the documentary too, and so I'll be talking about that here in a little bit with this. But so all of their clothes are identical, just to make it easy. They have shirt and pants for men, a modest blue dress for women, and all of the outfits are actually made by seamstresses on the premises. So that's one of the jobs that women have. And all of the women are expected to know how to sew. What to me is a little bit unique about Gloria Vale is that they actually do interact with the people in the community who are not a part of the cult, though it is not often. So everyone is involved in something during their month of what they call concerts, in which they have guests who are not in the community and they do different performances. So if there's dancing, the couple dancing must be a married couple, and most people are involved in the performances. But there are a couple who aren't, and those are the people who get the chores like cooking and setting up and cleaning for the events, and they do feed people at these events. It's essentially their contact with the outside world that happens every year. But also, if a seamstress were to like need an outfit for the concert that they couldn't make or that they didn't have the materials for, they don't have the time to do, they're actually allowed to go out and go to the shopping mall. And they do this in the documentary, and they go to Christchurch and they go to a shopping mall to find what they need. Which is bizarre to me. Like, just because of how secluded their community is, I'm just shocked that they're allowed to have that interaction with people when they come there, that they welcome people there every year, but also that they're allowed to go when they need to the mall.
Exactly. I mean, that's pretty cool that they let them do that. I don't know if anybody else is like me. You know, I always say things that are outrageous. So, yeah, maybe not. But anyways, when I think of cults, like, you think, like, you kind of think it's a one massive secret. They don't want anybody to know what the hell they're doing. They don't want any outsiders or anything like that around them. So it's really interesting to see that this group, like, they let their peers or people like interact with outsiders, basically.
Yes,
that's pretty cool.
It is. And they even talk about how, like, when they're out in public, like if they do go to the mall, for example, people want to take pictures with them, people want to ask them questions, and they're just like, people are curious, and how could they not be? They're like, you know, you can tell that right. We're different, and they don't know what goes on here, so people ask us questions. And so they're very open and honest about, you know, we're very godly people, and we choose to live a simple life, and, you know, this is how it is for us, which is just so
right, exactly.
Cool. Yeah.
I actually looked them up, like, a few minutes ago, like, I just Googled them, mm-hmm. and I seen, you may be talking about this, so I hope I don't spoil it, maybe not, but I seen that they have like their own website.
Yes, they do. And you know, if they have you can also see just like tons of pictures of them too, even if you don't want to watch this documentary or whatever, which and the documentary itself I didn't think was particularly worth watching. Every information mm-hmm. that you could need from it, you'll get in this episode. If you want to watch it just to kind of see how the people are and how they react, and everybody has an accent because they're in New Zealand and I love a New Zealand accent. But if you want to just like, you know, see how these people interact and, you know, how they are, it's an interesting thing to watch for that purpose. But yeah, they do. They have a website. I feel
like they dress like the Amish.
They do. In my opinion, they look just like Amish people. I'm sure it's slightly different, but their logic is just that they want to be modest. So they're like, women are not revealing any kind of skin. And I'll talk a little bit more about that, though, in a few minutes.
Okay.
So at age 16, women are required to go through a commitment ceremony in which they agree to remain meek and pure in exchange from being saved from eternal damnation. After that, they're officially allowed to be married. Gloria Vale would actually allow everybody to marry earlier if it were legal in New Zealand, but it's not. You have to be the age 16 to get married. So they abide by those rules, those laws, I should say. So people always marry within the community because, first of all, those are the people that they know. But also, their priority is to marry other godly people. So instead of caring about things like, you know, appearances or money, people simply care about if the other person is godly and if they're humble. Those are the things that matter the most to them and their spouse. So children are obedient to their father until they're married. Then, if they are the man, they become the decision maker. Or if they're the wife, they become the submissive to their husband instead of their father. So the husband makes literally every decision, and the wife must oblige. So to get married, a man has to speak to the shepherds, which are their leaders, about getting married, and they can decide whether or not they want to approve it based on if he's ready. So then they give you a list of women who are not your cousins and that are in your age bracket. And from that list, you're allowed to marry. So in the documentary, they're talking about this, and the one guy says they call it a short list, and it's usually like between 4 and 6 names of people who are in your age bracket, who are single, who you're not related to by blood. And so they then choose one of those people on that list that they're going to marry, and they say that they pray about it. And, you know, they've not really interacted with these people, keep in mind, and I'm going to talk more about that in just a moment, but like, they're not picking somebody based on really anything. So they say that, you know, they choose the name by prayer and what have you. So within 6 weeks of proposing to somebody, they get married. And it's their version of an arranged marriage. The divorce rate is literally 0. So they have to figure it out and figure out how to get along. So men still have to propose to the women, though. And in a lot of these cases, they've literally never spoken together. They just know who each other are. So the men are supposed to ask the father.
That is crazy.
It is crazy. So they're supposed to ask the father for her hand. And then they ask the woman. And then the woman goes and prays about it. She can take, you know, 30 seconds. Or she can take, you know, a day. But if she believes it's God's will, she says yes. So singles aren't supposed to mingle before getting engaged so that they don't end up liking each other. I'm going to say that again. So I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh. I know that this is, you know, this is somebody's religion and this is somebody's way of life. That just is the most opposite thing of my personal culture, you know, and it's, I know it's not appropriate to laugh, but it's so bizarre to me. Singles aren't supposed to mingle before they get engaged, so that they don't end up liking somebody.
Oh, so they want to make sure that when they go and pull or get the name, I said pull the name like it's a freaking drawing.
Out of a hat, basically.
When they go and get the name, they want to basically make sure that the person that they chose or that God supposedly chose for them is the person that they're with, because they're afraid if they mingle, they're going to go like somebody completely different.
That's correct. Right? That's correct. Good job. See, and it's just so funny to me on the surface because it's such a weird thing to say, though. It's like, so you don't want to...
It sounds right. Yeah. You're usually like, hey, I'm single, ready to mingle. And then they're like, no mingling for you.
And I understand. Yeah. And it's like, the idea is not even a little bit to marry for love. It's to marry to have a further godly relationship. And you learn to love each other. And it sounds... Go ahead.
It's one of those things where, for sure, I think you probably already said this. But it's for sure God is first and foremost. That's who you're supposed to be like devoting your undying love for. And then the person that you marry is just somebody that you procreate with, basically.
It's basically the point, yes. Except for that theoretically they learn to love their spouse and they love their spouse and that's part of their family. But you're right. God is their number one. So... Which is why I'm saying, like, I don't mean to laugh at it. Like, I understand that this is a religious thing. It just is so crazy to me because the idea of, like, intentionally not marrying for love is what?
Right. But, like, we spend all of our lives, like, watching shows and just watching people around us. They're all married because they love each other. They're not just getting married because that's something that they have to do. Or they feel is necessary. and they like fucking hate each other, realize they're complete opposites and hate each other, and then that's it. Then they have to learn how to deal with each other.
They have to.
That's why the idea of arranged marriages, like, I understand that that's in a lot of people, in some people's culture, and, you know, they're used to that. I don't understand, like, I understand, but I don't understand, if that makes any sense. It's kind of like, also, like, if you've ever been on a blind date, like, you're not expected to go on this blind date and just fucking come out and marry the person you're on the blind date. It'd be a total creeper, and you're stuck with that person forever. That just don't sit right with me.
You know, it's funny, too. I had a friend who had an arranged marriage when I think she was, like, 22, and because she's Indian, and that was her culture. Mm-hmm. And it was so strange to me how, and it's because, you know, it's a complete bias because of my personal culture, because that's not how I was raised and that's not what I see. But that doesn't make anybody else's way wrong. It's just so interesting to me. And she could not be happier. She, you know, at first she was weary about it. She's lived most of her life, not her entire life, in the United States. And she just was like, you know, at first kind of nervous about it. Like, what if I don't like this person? But she realized more and more that, you know, it's such a good idea for her, because having that kind of a domestic partnership where you can find a way to make things work with anybody is a really, really valuable trait. And you do it based on, you know, it's like, because her parents helped pick this man, and it's not, she got to meet him before they formally got engaged and stuff like that. It wasn't like this. Oh, I mean, and these people have met each other too, actually. So, but in she, mm-hmm. you know, she got to meet him and she got to interact with him. And at the end of the day, she could have said no. She was allowed that. And that's, I don't know, I assume that's true for Gloria Vale too, actually. It was not touched on at all in the documentary if somebody said no. But theoretically, they could, because if they did not feel that that was the person that God chose for them, they could say no. And that's just kind of how they're like, okay, well, we have similar values. And, you know, we want the same things from our life. We both come from a similar status and from a similar family. And it makes sense that this is the kind of person that, you know, on paper that I would build a future with. And honestly, doing it that way instead of on emotion-based, it's not that bad of an idea. And they're still married, and they have two kids now, and they're very happy, and she loves him.
Yeah, so really quick, sorry to drag this on, but they do this in Mexico, in some parts of Mexico, arranged marriages, they do that. And I actually know some people personally who actually did have an arranged marriage. She was in love with somebody completely different. She wanted to marry that person. She was dead set on them, like I said, madly in love. But then her parents forced her to marry this man. And, you know, I mean, they have a family now, but they just, you know, they just coexist, really. Like, the of course, they've grown to love each other, just because they've been with each other for so long. Mm-hmm. But they both had their own people who they wanted to be with, and they couldn't be with them at the end of the day.
That makes me sad. Yeah.
But they're great. Like I said, they've learned to coexist with each other, and they're as happy as they can be.
Right.
So.
Right. And I think something that's really important about a lot of these relationships that are arranged in, you know, in these situations, is you learn to really respect that person. Again, whereas when you're in an emotionally driven relationship, sometimes maybe you don't. I know I have dated men who did not respect me. I did not know that at the time, but I can recognize it now. And, you know, I'm sure that that happens in every scenario, but, you know, just thinking out loud. Anyways, so they have a courting period, and this courting period is 5 weeks long, so it's between the engagement and before they get married. And during this period, the engaged couple are allowed to talk alone for the first time ever and go around together and go on little dates, but they are supervised. There are always chaperones. And the women wear one of two dresses on their wedding day, either pink or powdered blue.
The dress is literally the same as, like, their everyday dresses, from what I can tell, just a different color. And the groom actually gets to pick the color. And they're, of course, really modest dresses. And men also, like, all have short hair, and women all have long hair. And women wear a head covering, which shows that they are subjected to men and lets them, quote, know their place. So,
okay.
I know.
So I was with it with the colored wedding dresses, because I love a colored wedding dress, but the submissive hat thing
is a little bit of a no-go for me, too. I agree. So once someone is engaged to get married, they announce it to the community in the dining area, because remember, they all eat together, and they do not touch or kiss or anything like that before the wedding day. Instead of, like, bachelor parties, the couple is thrown a pre-wedding party, which is usually different for each couple, and they consider it sort of like an initiation into married life. So in the documentary, one of the examples that they had, they put this couple on, like, this, it looks kind of like a paddle boat, but made of metal, and it was supposed to, like, represent them having challenges. So once they made it to a certain point in the river, like, where they're paddling this thing, people start throwing, like, water at them and stuff. And it's, like, it's crazy, but it's supposed to, like, make them, you know, bring out their sense of humor and learn more about each other, which I guess, I mean, I guess it's not untrue. You do learn a lot about somebody in that kind of a situation. But literally,
instead of throwing rice, they throw water.
Yeah, we're just going to soak you right before your wedding. Hope that's okay. So literally everybody attends the wedding, and the couple walks down the aisle together. And they're each holding a Bible. I thought that was really unique that they walk down the aisle together. And they do, you know, vows very similar to what you would expect in any other kind of Christian wedding ceremony. And then after their wedding, they go off to consummate their marriage immediately. And everybody's aware of it. And then when they come back for the meal with everybody, like, they have their own table that's, like, a little bit, like, higher than the rest of the table in the dining hall. So let me put that a different way. So they literally get married, they do the ceremony, and then everybody, like, waves them off so that they can go out to the room and they start, like, getting ready in the dining hall for the meal for when they're done having sex.
Great! So, like, everybody literally knows what you just did.
Right, and it's also all of their first time having sex. And everybody's like, yeah, go consummate your marriage. Start having babies. I was like, oh, this is weird.
Yeah, now that I just had sex right before I'm putting this food in my mouth, I put something else in my mouth. Okay, anyways.
Very strange. And then, you know, it's time to start making babies. So at Gloria Vale, people are barred from using any kind of contraceptive, and they think that if they're meant to have a baby, God will give them a baby. So it's very common for people to have over 10 babies, and the community as a whole has between 30 and 40 babies every single year. They actually, they have, like, birthing rooms, and so they do water births there in their own community, and they have midwives, but of course, if something goes wrong, thankfully, they're able to seek treatment at the hospital, which does happen periodically. You know, and when this started happening in the documentary, I started panicking, because, you know, we talked about this, like, a lot of cults, like, you're not allowed to leave the premises and stuff like that. And prior to this part in the documentary, they hadn't already left. And I was like, oh my God, please don't tell me they're not going to be able to leave and this is going to be terrible. But they are. They're allowed to leave if something goes wrong. So they actually do a really good job at that. And people name their kids, like, typically they give them a lot of really religious names. So you'll see, you know, names that you see in the Bible, but you'll also see names like Faith, Dove, Cheerful, Charity, Discretion, Mercy. Those are all very specific examples from the documentary. And each family is
discretion.
Also discretion. Yes.
I want that to be my nickname from now on. Discretion.
And also, like, the names, like, Discretion could be a boy or a girl. Mercy can be a boy or a girl. Like, it's not, like, a genderized name, whatever it is. So each family is also given a last name. So, like, examples of last names were Hopeful, Love, Steadfast, things like this. So
steadfast.
So if people want to leave, they can actually talk with the leaders about leaving.
and they have a discussion, and the leaders, of course, try to convince them to stay. And if they decide to leave, the sect has actually been known to give a small sum of money to the family, like, say, $1,000 for the departure. Because remember, they don't have anything. Oh, wow. Yes. And this is not an all-the-time thing. This is something that they claim. So, people would leave without talking to the leaders, though, because they knew that they would be manipulated into trying to stay, you know, if they spoke with the leaders. And if somebody in their family decides to stay, it would separate them. So a lot of people are like, you know, it's not worth that risk for money to potentially, like, get separated in our family. So manipulation tactics are, of course, used by leaders because they control the information brought in and out of the facility. So they warn families of financial struggles on the outside and of complicated lives without Christ. And members consider people leaving a greater loss than death because they aren't leaving for the reward. And they think that those who leave the cult are, quote, leaving the truth behind. And they consider, like, the ultimate reward for life going to heaven.
And actually, so there's, I mean, I think that's, you know, that's a really beautiful way of looking at life. That's great. Something kind of funny that happened in the documentary, though, that I need to talk about. If anybody has seen this, I mean, just listen to this. So, two of the people get married, and they're talking about having babies, whatever. And I think they're on their second child, and he's like, oh, you know, we're talking about having, you know, when we're going to get pregnant again and this and that. And he's like, you know, unless, you know, Jesus comes back and then, you know, we finally get to go to heaven instead. He's like, but if not, having another kid will do. So to him, he was like, oh, you know, hopefully, you know, he'll come back and we'll be able to die this year. But if not, whatever. We'll have more kids.
Yeah, you know, we'll just have another kid. Whatever. That ain't a big deal.
It was the weirdest thing to me. Not the concept. I can understand how, not really, but I could see where he's coming from at least a little bit. But just how it was just thrown in there so casually that he's like, yeah, maybe Jesus will come back this year and we'll all, you know, get to go to heaven finally and die. And I was like, what? And then they just carry on and they don't talk about it at all. And I was like, wait, what just happened?
Wait. Did we all just hear the same thing? Like, right. Why are we just brushing past this? Like, this isn't needed to be spoken about. Like, what? Right.
It was crazy. I was like, okay. So I had to do a little more research on that. But they talked about somebody did die in the documentary. They talked about, you know, how the members are waiting and looking forward for the world coming to an end, and dying is considered a good thing because that's how they get to the heaven. And they have their own cemetery, they build their own coffins, they don't do a funeral director, and they also don't do any embalming.
Oh, really quick. So, you're from Illinois, I'm from Florida. Okay, I had never seen this until I moved here. Have you, in Illinois, Illinois, have you ever seen people have their own, like, little cemetery in their yard for their family members?
I had never seen that, but I'm not going to say it didn't exist because it's very, I was too close to the city probably for that. It wouldn't surprise me if people had that, like, down in the country area of Illinois.
Okay, so I'm definitely in the city. That's me. I was in the city. Yeah, I didn't know that people did that until I moved up here and I moved directly to the country. And that's a thing. I just want to know if anybody else, you know, knows about this or has one in their yard. That'd be pretty cool for you to tell me about. Yeah. Because I know. It bothers me because I don't like cemeteries. Like, I like scary shit, but I don't want to openly, like, invite you to come haunt my house.
I get that.
But anyways, sorry, continue.
It's actually, I'm glad we're going to, from this point forward, it's going to get really dark. So I'm going to take this opportunity and give you a kind of thing. I think it's funny story. Since you're talking about that. I had birds when I was a kid, like parakeets, whatever, for the longest time. And, you know, of course, when the bird dies, you bury it. What else do you do with it, right? Well, we had in my house in Illinois, in like the front area, right by the front door, we had like mulch and stuff like that. And so my mom buried the bird like right underneath the mulch, like barely in the dirt right there. And I found that out and I'm like, those poor people one day, and there's like two or three of them in that area. Like, one day, somebody's going to decide they're going to change the landscaping there. And they're going to be like, what the fuck? How many dead birds are here?
It's going to be, like, their version of Pet Cemetery.
Yes!
And it's going to be all the birds.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so I had, like, four birds, I think. I don't remember. I just remember they were kind of colorful. Like, two birds were, like, that lime or, like, that highlighter yellow color. It's super cool. And the other birds that I had were, like, blue. But they all died. And, yeah, therefore, I don't like birds. But, anyways.
It's a terrible reason not to like birds.
It's not their fault that they died. I'm sure it was something I did. I think, like, the first set, like, I thought they were really cold, so I put, like, a blanket over them.
Oh, my God.
And the next morning, like, they were dead. And then the second pair, I think they might have been, like, too cold. No? I don't remember. But, yeah, no, they're dead. I just don't like birds because I feel like they don't know what personal space is. And I don't like to be poked. And they don't want to be bit by your beaks. So, yeah.
Okay, interesting, interesting. Well, this is all going to take a very ugly turn now. So, I would like to officially give you a trigger warning for the rest of the episode. It's really just going to be mainly in the beginning here. But, so, yeah, there's that. So, at this point, it's probably not going to be surprising when I start telling you that there were claims of sexual abuse at the cult. So, the founder, Neville Cooper, who eventually changed his name to Hopeful Christian, is a convicted sex offender. He was born in Australia, and he founded the cult in New Zealand in 1969. Neville got arrested for almost a year in 1995 for sexual abuse, and testimonies from his son, Phil, and the woman who had escaped Gloriaville is what got him arrested. So, this person says that Neville, very hard trigger warning, says that Neville penetrated her with a wooden object, but he says he merely gave her the object to use on herself as therapy. So at age...
What?
Yep. So at age 27, Phil decided he needed to leave the cult. Again, this is his son. He had five kids under eight and a wife. And the sect barred him from having any communication with his family when he left. So he decided that he was going to kidnap his wife and kids. So his wife ended up returning to the sect on her own, saying that one of the kids' parents had to be there for the kids to go to heaven. And in the documentary, one of the couples actually had a discussion that this reminds me of, and you actually brought this up also early on in the episode, that like they always told each other that God is first, but also... Mm-hmm. The one couple that I'm talking about in the documentary says that, like, if the other person decides to leave for any reason, they're leaving on their own. Like, I'm not going with you. So, that is a discussion that people do have. And leaders teach members that bad things are meant to be kept to yourself. So, Isabella Harrison, who's a former Gloriaville member, states that young boys are being sexually abused by older boys. And when it was brought to the attention of leaders, one of the leaders said, quote, "It's no worse than stealing an apple." Which, strongly disagree. So, it seems that that idea was kind of taken to heart for several people, because one member joined Gloriaville after being convicted of, quote, "unlawful sexual connection with a teenage boy," which is very vague. I don't know what that means. But when he was 20, in 2010, and he was 47 years old. So, with somebody under the age of 18. After spending 2 years in prison for it, he joined Gloriaville. And then 68-year-old Just Steadfast exposed himself and kissed a 9-year-old girl. He was only given 6 months of community detention and 2 years of intense supervision. He was not put on a sex offender list. And then there was Clem Reddy. He assaulted both of his daughters for over 13 years. There's no allegation that he necessarily did anything sexual to assault them, but he was physically assaulting both of them. And they were Prayer and Constance. Well, Prayer had Down syndrome, and he physically abused them both with his hands or with objects like a belt because he, quote, thought it did them some good. So in June of 2015, when Prayer was 14, she was in an isolation room at the sect. I could not find anything about this isolation room, by the way. I tried to look it up because it's crazy. The isolation room has disabled door handles so that people cannot get in and out. So I was trying to figure out, like, how the hell does this even work? And I got nowhere. So sorry about that. But she was in this isolation room and she choked on a piece of meat for her dinner. And she ended up dying in there. And so they just called and they just called it a tragic accident. And there are a disturbing amount of stories on the internet about people who have left the commune and have told of what it's like there. One of these people, Linda Feary, found out that her 13-year-old son had been gang raped by a group of boys there.
Oh.
So in May of 2018, Neville lost a battle to prostate cancer and he actually died. Well, ex-member Lilia Tarawa has a book called Daughter of Gloryvale, My Life in a Religious Cult. And I did not read her book, but she does have a TED talk that I listened to and I highly recommend it. It's only 20 minutes long. She has a beautiful accent. She's a really engaging speaker. And she is a granddaughter of Neville Cooper, who was brought to Gloryvale when she was 6 weeks old. So she began talking about, like, how great her life was there. She knew everybody. She got to spend so much time with all of the people that she loved. She said, quote, "We didn't work for money. We worked for the lifestyle and for each other." She talks about the festivals they would have that they called Celebration Day and about learning to play several instruments. And it really seemed like the best place on earth to her until she was 6 years old. It was then that she realized that the leaders, her grandfather included, use shame and guilt to make people feel like they had very little self-worth. So when she was 6, Lilia got a report card from school, and she had awesome grades. Her school teacher had written on there, quote, "Lilia demonstrates leadership skills, which could be useful when she's older." So her grandfather, Neville, decided that he would read this in front of the entire community in the dining hall, which was, like, super exciting for her. She was really proud of it. Until he said, "We don't want women like you." In front of everybody.
Fuck you, Neville.
Yep.
"We do want women like her."
But that's the thing. They don't. So she said she thought that she was to blame from that point forward when people mistreated her. That's how low her self-worth was. And she had looked so forward before to getting married and to having babies. When she got her period at age 12, she felt like she could finally fulfill her purpose because, as far as she thought at that point, her purpose in life was to have babies. But she soon realized that she did not want to have babies at Gloryvale, and she saw people that she loved get abused all the time. Regardless of what somebody did, punishments were pretty much the same. So school-aged boys would be bent over and pulled down their pants and beaten with a belt in front of their peers who were forced to watch. She had also seen babies with bruises on their backs. She witnessed a male teacher beat a student with no consequences. So when she was an early teen, a girl named Grace was sent to Gloryvale from another country, and she brought things with her, like music and stuff like that, which she got in a lot of trouble for. Well, Lilia and her became best friends. And when Grace was 20, Lily was about 17, she was told that she was being forced into a marriage that she did not want to be a part of. So Grace tried to escape, but she got caught. And she was told that she was evil, and they forced her to tell her adoptive parents, who were going to be helping her escape on the outside, that she wasn't coming. Well, they ended up threatening the cult and threatened to get the police involved, and Grace is successfully able to leave with them. But Lilia knew that, like, she couldn't do it anymore. She had 9 siblings, 2 of which had already run away from the cult. and she had another sibling who had tried to but did not succeed. So at this point, when she talked to her parents about it, she found out that they were also ready to leave. They just were scared to lose more of their children. So the entire family left when she was 18 years old, and now she lives, you know, a much happier and healthier life. But her her story is probably the one that you can find the most information about. She is very outspoken about it in a very good way, and I'm sure her book is very good too. But that sums up the case of Gloria Vale, the very, very religious cult that, of course, also has many flaws.
Right. Like, up until now, it sounded like it wasn't that bad. But, you know, yeah, this is not a place I want to be. I mean, it is neat that they kind of, like, they have their own world essentially there, and they do everything for themselves and all that. Like, they're independent. Like, that's really like a cool aspect,
right?
But everything else that you just mentioned, like, just basically killed the vibe in a way. Like, like, you just, like, brushing it under the rug doesn't sit right with me. And, like, given, like, basically pedophile is like a slap on the wrist, like, no.
Right. And it's funny because, like, the very first chunk of this where we were just talking about kind of what it's like living there, not my taste in lifestyle, but I can understand it. And that's what they show you on the surface. It's when you start reading, you know, things from people who have left the cult that you start to realize things that are actually going on there. Because, of course, all the people on the inside, nobody's talking about that.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I read a book one time, actually a few years ago, and it was, so it's not Gloria Vale, but it's kind of interesting because remember how I said that it kind of reminds me of the Amish?
Yeah.
So, the book that I was reading, it was about this girl, she escaped, or she was telling her story about how she grew up in an Amish community and things of that nature. And within that community, there was a bunch of, like, molestation going on, and these men who were, like, their leaders, they were molesting children, boys, girls, whoever they could basically get their hands on. And it's disgusting. And they, sometimes I feel like they use religion as, like, a crutch. In a way, like, a lot of times what I feel like what she said that the adults would say is that, because she did experience molestation, it wasn't just from older people, it was actually from people her age as well, even younger than her, like young boys and stuff like that. They just, this is what God would want.
Mm-hmm.
This is natural. You're here for me. You were put on this earth for me as a man.
That's so terrible. And
it's just disgusting.
I absolutely hate that. Yeah. And that this very much has those vibes too. And it's a lot of things about that are pretty terrible. Again, I can see how some people can find the appeal of that. And, you know, I'm sure there are plenty of people there who don't experience any kind of abuse. But in such a small community, when things like that are happening, I mean, there's if they're willing to let people who are pedophiles and convicted sex offenders be leaders there, that's enough, in my opinion, to say not worth it. But
exactly. And on the website that I found for Gloria Vale, I seen that they said something about having like 90 families in their community.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know why that number just stuck out to me, but it's interesting, like you said, like, in the fucking, on the website, one of the first things you see is, like, every year we have at least 30 babies a year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why is that one of the first things you mention on your website?
They just want to procreate. It's what they're all about.
It's just weird, but, you know, to each his own. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Exactly, to each his own. I will not be going there. But, you know,
Me neither. Yeah. I'll stick with the Raylan thing. So
yeah, you stick with your UFOs.
All yeah, right. I'll stay with my aliens and UFO people.
And I have not found one yet that I'm going to join, so we're going to leave it like that. You guys can find pictures from this episode on our Instagram at
Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
And you can follow us on Facebook to get our latest updates at
Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
If you would like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at
Crafts and Crime.
And you can join our Patreon and get some bonus episodes at
Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
Or if you want to send us an email so that you can suggest a case, or if you have something you want to mention about the episode that you don't want to mention on social media, you can email us at
craftsdressandcrime@gmail.com. When you email us, put the title as Discretion, because you know that's my nickname now. But yeah, do that. Reach out.
Yeah, do it. And if you listen on Apple, please rate and review us. We appreciate that. If you are able to do that on whatever other way that you're listening, then please do it there too. We just don't see it yet. We'll find a way.
Right. We definitely enjoy constructive criticism. We're still brand new. We're still like learning this whole thing. I know we say it all the time, how we want you guys to tell us what you hate, what you love. I mean, if you hate some things, then maybe keep it to yourself. But at the same time, maybe tell us. But, you know, whatever.
But most importantly, please keep listening. We appreciate that you guys are listening. It's what's going to keep us doing it. And we love doing it. So thank you so much for listening. Until next time. Bye.
Bye.